My administration is working overtime to show that our climate commitment is action, not words.
U.S. President Joe Biden on the world stage at COP26. It's Tuesday, November 2nd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Mimi Heibels in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, World Food Program warns of risk of global hunger from climate change. Australian international travel resumes for some. Street arts under Taliban rule. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Right now, world leaders are gathered in Glasgow, Scotland for COP26, or Conference of the Parties, the crucial UN climate summit. U.S. President Joe Biden arrived at the conference after traveling from the G20 in Rome. Speaking at the conference on day one, President Biden reiterated that the U.S. is back at the table when it comes to climate change. Rena Roy has more from Glasgow for ABC News.
President Biden on the world stage at one of the most important climate conferences in years.
We'll demonstrate to the world the United States is not only back at the table, but hopefully leading by the power of our example. My administration is working overtime to show that our climate commitment is action, not words.
Biden's infrastructure plan directs $555 billion to fighting climate change, but experts are skeptical he'll meet his goal of cutting greenhouse gases in half by 2030.
We only have a brief window left before us to raise our ambitions and to meet the task that's rapidly narrowing. This is a decisive decade.
He joins leaders from nearly 200 countries, kicking off negotiations at the pivotal two-week summit in Glasgow. The goal is to agree on how to limit global warming, with the world heating up more in the last 29 years than in the previous 110 years.
If we don't get serious about climate change today, it will be too late for our children to do so tomorrow.
The key topics, reducing those gas emissions plus phasing out coal, and how wealthier nations can help support developing countries already feeling the effects of our changing planet.
Failure to provide the critical finance and that of loss and damage is measured, my friends, in lives and livelihoods in our communities. This is immoral and it is unjust.
Some are concerned about the success of this year's conference, with leading polluters like China, Russia, and Saudi Arabia not attending.
Now, as they try to decide how to move forward, countries are also reviewing their progress on the Paris Climate Accord signed at the 2015 summit. Rena Roy, ABC News, Glasgow, Scotland.
This year's summit builds on a legally binding agreement that 196 parties, including the U.S., Russia, and China, signed 6 years ago in Paris. The international treaty commits those countries to embark on emissions cuts that aim to limit the planet's warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius over pre-industrial levels. We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Japan PM Kishida, strengthened by election win, lays out broad policy plans. Man with knife injures 17 on Tokyo train, starts fire. Former U.S. Ambassador Bill Richardson heads to Myanmar. Anti-Taliban group registers with U.S. to try to build Afghan resistance. Pakistan Islamists reach agreement to end violent rally. Additional coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The World Food Program says that without consolidated global action, the world faces a crisis of acute hunger due to accelerating climate change. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The World Food Program presents a bleak picture of the impact global warming and climate-related extreme weather events are having on people's lives. It says climate shocks are destroying lives, crops, and livelihoods, and undermining people's ability to feed themselves. It cites Mozambique as an example of a country particularly vulnerable to climate change. It notes millions of people are suffering from food scarcity because of punishing cyclones, drought, and pest infestations leading to agricultural losses. WFP spokesman Thompson Feary said that hunger will increase rapidly throughout vulnerable communities worldwide if global action is not taken to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, which are leading to climate change.
Research shows that if global temperatures keep rising to hit the 2 degrees Celsius mark, an additional 189 million people could become food insecure. Now, in a 4 degrees Celsius warmer world, this number could increase by as many as 1.8 billion people.
The WFP describes the devastating wide-reach climate change is having on the livelihoods and communities in the dry corridor of Central America, in Afghanistan, where drought was officially declared in June, and in Yemen, where severe and frequent floods have damaged and destroyed infrastructure and homes. Feary says the WFP is helping people in communities where food is in short supply to prepare for, as well as respond and recover from climate shocks and stresses. He says the agency has reached more than 6 million people in 28 countries with climate risk management solutions. For example, he says the WFP provided cash assistance for 120,000 people in Bangladesh 4 days ahead of severe flooding to help them protect critical assets. In Madagascar, he says, the WFP has launched a microinsurance program to help farmers who have lost their crop due to drought.
The World Food Program is calling for coordinated global climate action to urgently address the challenges of the climate crisis and to reduce its impact on hunger. More specifically, we are advocating for a shift from crisis response to risk management.
Feary says governments should manage risks rather than disasters. He says a more forward-looking perspective is needed to prepare for bigger and more frequent climate shocks and enable early action to help prevent predictable climate emergencies. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In other news, China has reactivated a direct air trade link with Afghanistan in a bid to assist the war-ravaged neighbor's new Taliban rulers in dealing with a deepening economic and humanitarian crisis. A cargo plane carrying 45 tons of pine nuts Sunday flew out of Kabul for Chinese markets, marking the restoration of the commercial corridor after the Islamist Taliban seized control of Afghanistan in August. China, one of the largest importers of Afghan pine nuts, launched the air freight corridor in November of 2018 to help Afghanistan increase its exports of dry and fresh fruits to Chinese markets and address a massive trade deficit. Happening now in Asia, Taiwan Monday received 1.5 million doses of Moderna vaccine donated by the U.S. government. A shipment of 2.5 million donated doses arrived in June. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Australians are being allowed to travel overseas without COVID-19 restrictions for the first time in almost 600 days. Previously, they needed government permission to go overseas under strict measures designed to curb the spread of the coronavirus. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports for VOA.
After more than 18 months, Australia is reconnecting with the world as vaccination rates increase. There were tearful reunions at Sydney Airport as the first overseas passengers landed after restrictions came to an end. Australians can now travel freely overseas without needing official permission. Returning travellers flying home into the states of New South Wales and Victoria no longer face mandatory hotel quarantine. They must, however, be double vaccinated, and only Australian citizens, permanent residents, and their immediate families can return home at this stage. Australia will reopen quarantine-free entry to fully vaccinated Singaporeans from November 21. But it's unclear when other foreign nationals, who've been mostly banned since March 2020, will be permitted to enter. Thousands of Australians have been stranded overseas during the pandemic by some of the world's toughest border controls. Authorities placed limits on the number of travellers allowed back because of constraints on the quarantine system. Melbourne Airport has also been preparing for the resumption of large-scale passenger numbers. Chief Executive Lyle Strambi says pandemic border closures have been hard on staff.
We haven't really stopped flying, so we've been able to keep things working and making sure that everything's in great shape. But the stop-start nature of the whole episode we've been through has been, you know, really tough. In particular, you know, for the employees at the airport, we'd normally have 20,000 people working at the airport. I think a few times they were down to as low as 500 people. So it's been really hard on those individuals in particular.
Internal border controls remain in parts of Australia. Residents in Sydney and Melbourne, for example, can now fly freely to Paris, France, but not to Perth in Western Australia. Travellers from New South Wales and Victoria, which have been at the centre of Delta variant outbreaks this year, can only enter Western Australia with an approved exemption permit and must be double vaccinated. Queensland state authorities plan to ease their internal border restrictions on December 17. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Making headlines in Asia, Thai authorities have given the green light to vaccinated tourists from over 60 low-risk countries to skip hotel quarantine on arrival, providing the tourist sector with a much-needed lifeline after 18 months of COVID curbs. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Afghan artists and activists say the Taliban have replaced their murals with their logo and slogans, making it impossible for them to continue working in Afghanistan. VOA's Yalda Baktosh has more.
This is Kabul. Before its fall to the Taliban, these vibrant murals were painted by artists and activists to raise awareness and promote peace. But the Taliban have been replacing the murals with their black and white logos and slogans since seizing control of the country this summer.
The murals were to create awareness about preventing violence against women, health issues such as polio, supporting the Afghan security forces, peace, and other issues. When the Taliban regime came to power, all the murals in Kabul and other provinces were removed.
The paintings on these protective cement barriers in Kabul say the artists and activists were aimed at fostering hope in the war-torn country.
I think that the murals that art lords were painting together with the people of Afghanistan were helping us to forget our grief and pain for a moment and to think about kindness, love, and hope for the country.
Art Lords, a grassroots arts organization, invited regular Afghans to participate in the paintings with the goal of making Kabul into the world's street arts capital. Now, Afghan artists say no place for themselves under Taliban rule.
There is no place for art in the Taliban's ideology. They have no idea how arts and culture can help a country or give hope to a country.
When they ruled the country 20 years ago, the Taliban banned all forms of art. Now, despite the Taliban's promises of transformation, Afghan artists say the group has remained unchanged. While some artists have fled the country, others remain and say they hope to continue their work. Yalda Baktosh, VOA News, Washington.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Chris Cascao, Keith Lane, Jessica Stone, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Mimi Heibels in Washington. Please stay safe and make it a great day.